Hello, Patriots. This is Living with Liberty, your source for common sense and truth, bringing you insight from outside the mainstream. I am your host, Ryan. Today we talk about lab meat, Bill Barr's thoughts on the Trump indictment, and Megan Rapinoe not being much of a champion for women's rights in sports. Next on Living with Liberty. Companies have a different approach to innovation and bringing a product to market if we had a different approach as consumers in making sure that those new innovations are not likely to harm us. I have an Epoch Times article here titled Harmful Until Proven Otherwise by Raw Egg Nationalist. That's got to be one of the best pen names ever. Raw Egg Nationalist. Maybe it's an entire publication. I don't know. But at any rate, kind of a cool name. Anyway, so I've got this article by Raw Egg Nationalist here that covers our penchant for jumping at the new shiny object without really considering if it's going to be good for us or not. Now, Raw Egg Nationalist asks a few great questions here in their piece. And the first one goes like this. What past harms might we have prevented by waiting for tests or studies, by having been less eager to take things at face value, and by thoroughly having assessed new and needed innovations for unforeseen consequences? Well, that kind of sounds like the rush to take the COVID jab, doesn't it? What past harms could have been prevented had we just taken a step back and said, wait a minute here, what do we know about this thing? Now, fear drove many to roll up their sleeves without considering the fact that there were no long-term data on the potential effects and the long-term effects of the jab, nor were there the normal years and years of development and clinical trials done to determine what those long-term effects might be. And you know what? I'm going to put this out on YouTube, and they're probably going to take me down because I mentioned the jab and brought up these facts. I'm betting on it. Yeah, at least I got my one strike, I think, is finally one of my strikes. My two strikes, anyway, are gone. But you can't deny that fact. There was no long-term study done on this jab, on the COVID jab, like there have been for every other vaccine and medicine that we've had handed down to us, if you will, whatever you want to call it. That's just an undeniable fact. Go and look it up. We were just told, take this and you can live in society. That's what we were told about the jab. Take it and you'll be fine. You can live in society. You can go out and about in society. Just take the jab. That's what we were told. It was a big pressure campaign. And because of that, many jumped at the offer. Again, fear drove a lot of that, right? A lot of fear of COVID was unknown, relatively speaking. Even by the time the jab came out, it was ever evolving. And when the jab came out, it seemed to start to evolve quicker. It started to mutate quicker, right? And the jab was made for one particular strain, and we got five strains down the road, and the jab wasn't as effective. Again, probably get taken down for that comment, but that's also a certifiable fact. Go and look at the research, YouTube commies. We just jumped at this. Many of us, not we, we as like society, many of us jumped at the offer to roll up our sleeve, take a jab, and we could go about going back to restaurants and traveling internationally and traveling even to certain states within a union, right? We didn't give a second thought to the fact that this new and unproven technology might have some effects on our body, especially, again, because there weren't those long-term clinical trials done on it. It was developed and being put in people's arms in under a year. So the people that took it didn't give a thought. The fear drove the decision or the want to travel and do those things that we were doing before COVID shutdowns happened, drove people to say, okay, well, I don't know much about this. Let me stick it in my body anyway. I don't know what it's going to do to me, but hey, let's do it. You know, if it means I can go back to living my normal life, I'll do it. And then people took it and they didn't get to go back to where to living their normal life. So what did that prove to anybody? That the conspiracy theorists were right once again, that it was just a control mechanism. Now, getting back to the article here, the jab wasn't what raw egg nationalists had in mind when they asked the question. That was just what I threw in there. That was the first thing when that first statement I read came to mind. Oh, what is it? Oh, yeah, COVID jab, among other things, right? There's been other things that we've had pressure campaigns on that we didn't give a second thought to, oh, this is new. Let's do it because it's new and exciting and progressive and whatever else, you know, whatever other buzzwords people want to throw out there to get trial on something. So that wasn't what raw egg nationalists had in mind, wasn't the COVID jab. What prompted the question for them was the fact that Good Meat, the lab-grown or cultured meat division of Eat Just Incorporated, has now received approval from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to start selling its first product, cultured chicken, to the American public. Yes, cultured chicken. You know what that means? I'll tell you what it means in a minute here. It's what this sounds like is a whole lot of fun, right? That's fun. The FDA is approving cultured chicken for consumption by the American public. So that sounds like a lot of fun here. We have lab-grown chicken we know nothing about. So what does this mean? This means our protein choices, if we looked further down the road and if we continue on the slide we are on today, our protein choices are lining up to be bugs or lab meat. Come get your Petri dish chicken dusted with a crunchy ant coating now. So what do we do, or what do we know, I should say, about lab-grown meat's impact on our bodies? Not much. We don't know anything about it. Totally new thing. Now, yeah, we have the plant-based meat. This stuff looks so it's just so unappetizing. You go to the meat case at your local grocery store. Look at I forget which brand it is. But it's basically your organic meat product. They have a sausage here. It looks like a giant dog turd is what it looks like. It's so unappetizing. And whenever I go, that part of the meat case is always full. So nobody's buying this crap. Who wants to eat something that looks like a giant dog turd? Nobody. I mean, it's just gross looking. Nobody wants fake meat. I mean, I'll post the article from Raw Egg Nationalists in the description box, but in there they make a note that they surveyed Australians and 74% of them said, yeah, I'll shave 10 years off my life if it means I get to eat real meat. So people don't care. They don't, it's like, fine, I want what I want. And actually that should make the globalists happy, right? That people are willing to shave 10 years off their life by eating real meat. So what do we know about it? We don't know anything about what the impact of lab-grown meat is on our bodies. We've never eaten lab-grown meat as a dietary staple before. Never in the human history have we grown meat in a Petri dish and then eaten it. What we're being told is we're just being told that it'll be good for the environment. So buy it and eat it so we can eliminate the farting chickens and stop climate change and global warming and whatever other buzzword the climate alarmists want to throw our way, right? Let's get rid of these farting chickens. You know, if this takes off, hey, we'll be able to eliminate farting cows too because we can grow a beef brisket in the lab now. Do we know if lab-grown meat would increase our risk of cancer? How about would it cause digestive issues? We don't know. We just don't, because the FDA is willing to approve this without any sort of trial period. Oh, yeah, here. Oh, you grew a chicken breast in the lab. Here. Fine, we'll approve it. Yeah, sell it in the stores. Yeah, we'll get rid of global warming because we're eliminating, you know, flocks of chickens. Because now people can get their meat in a Petri dish. What's this crap come in the store? They just take the Petri dish out of the lab, wrap it up in some Saran wrap and send it off to the store? What's that going to look like? I don't know. These are things I think about, I guess. But it wouldn't surprise me here. Oh, straight from the lab shelf and to your table. Here's a Petri dish. Save it for your homeschool science experiments. We just don't know what this stuff's going to do, right? I'm just at a loss for words for this. Why the hell would anybody want lab-grown meat? And why would anybody rush to buy it if you don't know what it's going to do to you? We've not learned our lessons, right? We haven't learned any lessons from the forced the pressure campaigns on the COVID jabs. And now what we're finding out in the data that's coming out about, you know, the effectiveness and the potential side effects and all that. We rushed out and stuck that thing in our body without ever knowing exactly what the likely side effects are. And here we're going to go down this path again, because you know damn good and well there's going to be somebody out there that says, oh, yeah, let me do what's good for the environment. I'll buy this Petri dish of chicken. Just smoke it up. Anyway, there will be, I'll guarantee you, there will be an intense advertising blitz to buy this product. Why is that? Why would there be an intense advertising blitz? And not only that, it'll be an intense advertising blitz meant to shame you. Why is that? Because the envirofascists will demand it in order to save the planet. That's why. That's why you'll see governmental subsidies for this potentially. I guarantee you there will be governmental subsidies for this. At some point, some lobbyists for the lab meat industry will get in some politician's ear. They'll write a bill and there will be subsidies for lab meat, so it's competitive against regular, you know, farm bred chicken and beef and pork, turkey, whatever else they want to grow in the lab. Guaranteed, it will happen. You know it. Just look at the energy industry, right? And how many subsidies there are for like electric cars and renewable energy, wind, solar, that just degrades the environment around us by putting those things up, kill a bunch of birds with the windmills. The solar arrays that are dark and absorb a bunch of sunlight and get warm and contribute to the warming ground temperatures. I mean, come on. You know it's coming. Now, Raw Egg Nationalist backs me up on this. They note this in their piece. They say this. Companies like Oatly, in line with recommendations from researchers, are falling back on social pressure, including shame, to sway people to buy their products. And advocates of a global transition to plant-based diets are all for weaponized inflation and government intervention. So you think about that. Who's buying this? Who's putting the pressure on this? It's the control freaks of society. The ones that are constantly wringing their hands about climate change. The ones that, you know, I guess graze in their front yard instead of like buying meat. I don't know. Those are the people. The ones that demand government intervention, that want government intervention, are the ones pushing this, that will push this. It's the one, same people that have infected corporate culture. It's the ones that are all for the weaponized inflation. And what's going to add to that inflation? Well, subsidies on stuff like crappy lab meat will increase inflation, right? So they'll take and figure out a way to inflate the price of chicken and beef more than it already is. And then on top of that, and then to counteract that, they'll put subsidies on this crappy lab meat here. So it looks like it's cheaper than the chicken you get in a store or the beef you get in a store. And then once the people have switched from beef, real beef, real chicken to the lab grown crap, then they'll take the subsidies away and people will be screwed. There'll be inflation on that stuff. And it's a subsidy. What is a subsidy? It's an artificial deflation of the price, if you will. So there it is. You've got this. Control the food supply. You control the people. That's the point here. Keep up the shaming of people who prefer real milk to the oat juice in order to get them to switch to this plant-based product that's nowhere near as good as the original because it's better than the environment. So that's what they do. Oatly shaming. Oh, it's good for the environment. Don't you want to do good for the environment? Here, drink our oat juice. That tastes like absolute feet. You shame people into giving up their rights. That's what's going on here. We've seen it over and over. Now, are you seeing the tactic here? It's fear and shame. Fear and shame. Utilize one or both to get us, we the people, to throw out our sensibilities and act in accordance with how the globalist puppeteers want us to act. You got to want to save the planet. The planet's dying. We're going to be all gone in 12 years. Here, drink this oat juice and have your Petri dish chicken with it. We need to take a step back when it comes to a lot of these new innovations especially the ones that go in our bodies, and ask ourselves, what do we know about the long-term ramifications to our health or to our society by engaging in commerce, by snapping up these new products that are new and innovative, so to speak. We need to demand more transparency in the data surrounding the testing of these new products, especially ones that are going to be put into our bodies. Like I said before, I don't know what this stuff's going to do to my insides. I know what real chicken and real beef do. I don't know what this lab-grown crap would do, so I'm not going to eat it, period. Once we start consuming products, these new products in a different way, once we start doing our due diligence on them and not giving these companies the false sense of security that they've got a hit on their hands because a bunch of us go and buy it right away, companies will start being more transparent in how they push them to market. They'll give us more information, and dare I say, they may even do a little bit more testing and research on it before they go to the government to push it out upon us. Subscriptions are one of the big ways podcasts get discovered, so if you could please do me a favor, pause whatever platform you are listening on or viewing on, and hit that subscribe button. It will give you an alert whenever a new Living with Liberty is published, and subscriptions help us get into the recommendations so others can find the show. All right, moving on here. Will Trump come out of this indictment by the Manhattan DA, Alvin Bragg or Melvin Bragg, whatever, I still don't care enough about the guy, to learn his name, whatever, Alvin, I guess Alvin, like the chipmunk. Definitely more of a Theodore if you're talking chipmunks, this guy. But anyway, so will he come out of this indictment stronger or weaker? Now, former Attorney General Bill Barr thinks this will definitely rally the Trump base, which we can all agree on that it has and it is, but ultimately will weaken Trump in the general election. Barr believes that this is an unjust case. I think, again, all of us, a good majority of us, not all, that's absolutist, a good majority of us view that as such. There's really nothing here. It's a big nothing burger, this indictment. And Bill Barr believes that it also lacks merit. Again, we agree, I think, there with him. But in an Epoch Times piece by Jeff Lauterbach titled "Former AG Bill Barr, Bragg's case against Trump is a political act, will gravely weaken Trump," it's noted that Barr said this: "The savvy Democratic strategists know that Bragg's investigation is going to help Trump, and they want him to be the nominee because he is the weakest of the Republican candidates and the most likely to lose again to Joe Biden, and that this stuff is going to drag out through 2024 and that it's going to stymie and disrupt the whole Republican primary process." Barr goes on, "I also think, though, as far as the general election is concerned, it will gravely weaken Trump. He's already, I think, a weak candidate that would lose, but I think this sort of assures it." Now, I think Barr is absolutely correct here, and I covered this a few shows ago now. How the timing of all this coincides nicely with the ramp up of primary season. And that was part of the point here. Now, we've gone over it. The 2016, federal prosecutors neglected to indict Trump or to even investigate Trump for this. Southern District of New York, the Federal Elections Commission denied that, you know, any sort of prosecution on this because there's nothing there. There was nothing there. But Theodore, Alvin, Simon, whatever, you know, Chipmunk Bragg here, decided that we need to bring this case. We need to bring 34 counts, felony counts for business fraud here. And we're going to do it in such a way, 2023, right around March, because, you know, that gets us the timing about right then to affect and make the Republican primary a nightmare and make it a big circus. So Bill Barr is correct there. It's going to drag into 24. Bank on it. And it's going to drag all the way through 24 should Trump make it through the primary. So it'll be the entirety of 2024 we'll be hearing about this. You can bet on it. Bill Barr potentially has one thing wrong here, though, I think, in my opinion. In a rematch of Trump and Biden, I think Trump pulls that one out. I really do. Biden has been such a disaster, and he's clearly cognitively impaired. He's not up to the rigors of the job. His staffers are hiding him. He doesn't do press conferences. He doesn't take questions. His policies have just been an absolute disaster in causing inflation, causing us to lose our standing on the world stage as an ally countries can trust. I mean, how many countries have turned away from us under the Biden administration's just awful foreign policy? Tons, right? You've got, Saudi Arabia and Iran making deals through China. Yeah, China is brokering deals in the Middle East. That should have been our role, right? That was a role we played as the United States. So Biden's been just such a disaster. I think in a rematch of Trump and Biden, Trump pulls that one out. I think voters take that into account, how big of a disaster Biden is, the fact that he's not up to the rigors of the job, and they don't cast a ballot for Biden. They might not necessarily cast it for Trump either, but they won't cast it for Biden. They'll maybe write somebody in. Maybe they'll go with one of the other third parties that run on a presidential ticket. Maybe they just don't show up. But I think Trump beats Biden in a rematch. I really do. Biden's just been that bad. Historically bad numbers in terms of his approval rating. So I think in that Bill Barr is wrong that I think Trump wins a rematch. Here's the other thing, though, to consider. We still have a sitting president here who hasn't yet declared that he will seek another term. So I think that opens up the whole Pandora's box of possibilities here. Could it be that Democrats know that Biden isn't likely to be running again and are, with this indictment and this political witch hunt, if you will, of Trump, they're setting the stage to get their preferred opponent on the Republican ticket against like a Mayor Pete or the spawn of Satan himself, Gavin Newsom, who has been doing a little non-campaigning himself? Is this really all part of the plan? The Democrats certainly don't want a DeSantis going up against either of those two clowns. Hey, DeSantis will wipe the floor with Mayor Pete and spawn a Satan here. So the Democrats don't want DeSantis anywhere near the top of the ticket. So what do you do? Bill Barr raises the interesting point here of Trump being the weakest Republican candidate. So are the Democrats, by way of this political witch hunt, actually doing that? Actually making sure that they get the weakest candidate to the top of the Republican ballot? Are they actually doing this knowing they're going to take the L in court to try and rile up the Trump base enough to push him through and win the primary into a general where they may or may not put a more sane, that the Democrats, that is, may or may not put a more sane and mentally aware candidate on the ticket against Trump? Democrats, you got to admire what they do politically. Right. Well, while they have their issues like we do on the right, when it comes to just pure savvy and pure conniving and cunning, they take the cake every time. I'm sorry if that hurts conservatives' feelings, but it's the truth. They do. They think that we used to talk about Trump, right? Trump's playing 4D chess against everybody else. Well, politically, Democrats do that. Let's be honest. So are they willing, setting this up, willing to take the loss in court to make Alvin Bragg their fall guy, to rile up enough of the Trump base to get out and vote for Trump, push him through the primary into a general where he would be a weak candidate against any Democrat they put up, any sane Democrat? You couldn't put a lunatic like Elizabeth Warren up there, I don't think, or Bernie Sanders for that matter. But you get somebody that's more middling, like Biden was supposed to be. I think, you know, Trump, yeah, Trump is in trouble then. I really think he is. And I on that premise and what I've seen out of Trump so far, I'm tending to agree with Bill Barr. He probably is the weakest candidate in the field of Republicans. I'm sorry if you know, you're a Trump fan and that stings a little bit, but let's be objective here. There is a ton of baggage that comes with Donald Trump that doesn't come with Mike Pence, Nikki Haley, Ron DeSantis, Vivek Ramaswamy. There just isn't. And that's a huge, when you're talking about having to win independents, both right and left-leaning independents, right? And independents just kind of float with whoever the best candidate is. That's why they're an independent, not pulling the handle just because there's a letter next to anybody's name. When it comes to trying to win independence, when it comes time to win, call it disenfranchised Democrats, the ones that are sane, the ones that are moderate, that are looking at the Democrat Party and seeing what a disaster and Communist Party it's become and how far it's strayed from American ideals. You know, those ones that if they have a solid candidate on the Republican side, they might cross over. Trump isn't going to be that guy. I'm sorry if that stings. I'm sorry if you don't want to believe that, but that is the truth. Trump isn't going to be that guy unless he gets on message. Get away from the stolen election talk. You can use this indictment. That's perfectly fine because this is a political witch hunt. You can point to it as the fact that our court system, our justice system has been corrupted and say, I'm going to clean this up. He's got the FBI. He can point to and say, I'm going to clean that up. Right? Other bureaucracies, I'm going to clean those up. Get on message. I'm going to get inflation under control. He's got to reach out to the broad base of American people, not just his base. There are a lot of people that are America first that won't pull the handle for Trump. Just because I get it. He's an American first candidate. I love that. But I think from the Republican Party as a whole, you're starting to see a lot more of those folks come out. DeSantis being one of them. Now, does this indictment give him a boost? Yeah, it absolutely does. I think he's, you know, he kind of was a front runner to begin with, but, you know, it's early yet. And we haven't heard much from other candidates for one. So he's got a little bit of an advantage there in terms of the early polling. But the messaging has to be on point or you're going to turn off those independents and disenfranchised Democrats that are going to be needed to win a national election, period. So is that what the Democrats are trying to do? They're trying to push Trump through. It could be, right? I wouldn't put it past them. We see it all the time. It happened here. It happened in our state Supreme Court race here. We had Democrats buying ads against the conservative candidate. It happens all the time. And that happened in the primaries. They looked at the two candidates on the conservative from the conservative standpoint here and bought ads against the ones against the stronger candidate. So the weaker candidate made it through. It happens all the time. So are we seeing this happen again? Bill Barr might be right on that. Now, the Dems will try to put another candidate with a message of unity and calm and you know, the opposite of chaos, opposite Trump. That's what they'll do. You know, they will. It won't be. I have a feeling it's not going to be Biden. And they'll be able to point out to the people, you know, in terms of their messaging, saying, do you want chaos and disarray, which is what follows Trump, let's be honest, or do you want stability and unity? So they'll have that instant contrast there, right? And no matter what, get outside your circles of your American first, your MAGA, let's call your Trump supporters. I encourage you to get outside those people. Talk to some other conservatives, talk to some other Republicans, talk to some independents and get what they think about Trump. Because I'm going to tell you right now, I talk to those, I have a lot of friends that are that way and they are tired of Trump, period. And they're going to have a hard time pulling a handle for him come 2024, November 2024. We have to get outside of our little echo chambers and look at the broader picture here. And I think when it comes to Trump, that's what we're lacking. We're not getting outside that broader picture. And again, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for, right? I said last show, vote your conscience, do what you're going to do. But we have to be cognizant of what we're getting and what that means in terms of potentially winning a national election. Because that's what it's boiling down to at this point. I don't think the House majority is going to grow much in 2024. We should be able to flip the Senate. So at least we'd have the legislative branches. But that's not going to do us a whole lot of good of reversing the damage the Biden administration has done if we don't have the presidency, because it takes all three of those entities to sign off on a bill and put it into law. So we have to think about what are we going to gain? What are we going to lose? That's how we have to think about this. And that's how the Democrats are going to paint it. Are they going to paint it as, do you want chaos and disarray? Do you want someone who is indicted on felonies, even though we know it's BS charges? Or do you want somebody who's going to bring stability and unity? Do you want someone who is always looking at the past, still claiming stolen elections? Or do you want a president who's looking forward to the future of the country and our people? Remember, politics is as much marketing and propaganda as it is candidate. Remember that political ads and messaging cater to the lowest common denominator here, the uninformed voter. That's who they're going after. They won't do any research outside of whatever ads show up in their social media feeds or on TV during their sports ball matches. They just won't. They'll take whatever they see on TV, and that's what burns in their mind, and then they go to the polling place and pull the handle based on that. So you got to remember that most voters aren't that informed. The Dems are building their messaging now. They're building the base right now with this Trump indictment for what their messaging is going to be for the 2024 presidential cycle. It won't matter that Trump is likely to be acquitted on the charges in Manhattan. The Dems have gotten what they needed in terms of Trump being indicted and arraigned. They've gotten the perp walk. They've gotten the pictures of him in court being arraigned. They've gotten what they need for their 2024 messaging during the presidential election cycle. If you are listening to the audio-only show and your platform allows for reviews, please give us a 5-star review. It helps others find the show. Whether you are listening to the audio version or viewing on Rumble or YouTube, hit that Rumble or thumbs up button. The more interactions we have, the more the show gets into the recommendations made by the algorithms, and the more we are able to spread the truth. All right, finishing up today, I have a Red State article here by Sister Tolja. I love these pen names. They have some cool ones at Red State, too. Sister Tolja, I like that one. Anyway, her article here is titled, "Megan Rapinoe Rips Masks Off Once and for All in a Letter on Protection of Women in Sports Act." So that's the act the Republicans have put forward that said, hey, let's keep biological men out of women's sports. That's the, in a nutshell, what that act is. Megan Rapinoe, who claimed in the past to be fighting for women's rights in sports, has apparently bought a ticket on the train to letting boys play women's sports. She said this just 2 years ago. "As a woman who has played sports my whole life, I know that the threats to women's and girls' sports are a lack of funding, resources, and media coverage, sexual harassment, and unequal pay." She also left out mediocre men posing as women so they can dominate in a sport, but that's neither here nor there, apparently. "So fighting for women's rights in sports is so important, then why isn't she on the side of not letting biological males play women's sports? Does she not realize that we could just fill the U.S. women's national team, or I think she plays like women's a professional women's soccer team in Seattle or something like that. Doesn't she realize that we could just fill those U.S. women's national teams or those women's leagues teams with a bunch of poser women and that she'd be out of a job? I mean, is she not thinking about this? What are the concepts? What have we seen? Okay, think about, you know, Leah Thomas, whatever dude's name is, a swimmer guy that, you know, broke all kinds of NCAA records, women's swimming records, you know, a 6'3" man, you know, swimming against, you know, 5'7" women. I mean, give me a break. Well, what have we learned here? That men, biological men, no matter how many blockers and hormones are on, will still dominate in a women's competition because our body types are different. They're, from an athletic standpoint, they are superior to women's. So does she not realize that her job is in jeopardy, could be in jeopardy, if there were enough poser men out there, you know, the men that weren't good enough to make the men's national team say, oh, you know what, all of a sudden I'm transgender, I'm a girl now. Let me go trial for the women's national team. They'd all be out of a job. You can't tell me they wouldn't be because male athletes, the male body is superior when it comes to physical feats. To athletic feats. It just is. Are there athletic women out there? Yes, they're amazing, but they're still not anywhere near what a man is, period. Here's more proof. And it's a bit of an extreme example, but it's more proof. Setting this up here, we're not even talking about men here with this example I'm about to give. Now, the U.S. women's team scrimmaged a U-15, under-15 boys team a few years back, and they got smoked 5-2 in a soccer match. Now, the article I'll post it in, and you can make your own decisions, right? I'll post it in the description box. But the article itself tries to poo-poo this fact by saying the women's team wasn't going all out. You know, they were just trying to tune up and get a little work in before their match with Russia. But let's be real here. Let's ask a tough question here. Would the men's team not going all out have the same result against an under-15 boys team? Highly doubtful. Highly doubtful. That boys team, I guarantee you that boys team was playing as hard as they could. You know, whether it's a male or female team out there, they were playing as hard as they could. That boys team, if this was a men's team playing as boys team, that boys team would not have even sniffed a goal. I would be willing to bet. We are talking here about a team of professional women's soccer players that went against a teenage boys team and got smoked 5-2. So even teen boys, even teen boy bodies are superior to that of women, of athletic women, and within reason. And Tom and I covered that Tuesday. You know, there's definitely certain situations. Like I'm not trying to arm wrestle a woman powerlifter. That might be embarrassing for me. I'll admit that. But, you know, end of the day, right? All things being equal. You know, I said there's probably even at my age, a lot of women athletes that I'm still stronger and faster than. It just is because my body type's different. Here again, teenage boys, body type's different than, you know, women athletes because they're boys. They're growing, especially teenage boys. They're getting bigger and stronger. So Rapinoe can keep it up. She keep advocating for biological men to play women's sports. I guarantee she'll be the first one crying when they lose to a team with men posing as women on it. And she'll be the first one crying when there's one of these mediocre men that are going to take her place on the women's national team or the club team she plays on. She just will. She'll be the first one crying about it. I guarantee it. Before I go, don't forget to tune in live to Rucksack Radio on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Central for Laughs and Liberty with Tom and me. You can catch us live on Riverside FM, Rumble, YouTube, or Twitch. Friends, that's my show for today. Thank you for tuning in. Please check out my website, livingwithlibertypodcast.com. There you'll find links to my past shows, my original articles, as well as other resources to help arm you with knowledge in fighting off the prevailing narratives of the day. While on my website, shop my store, Living with Liberty Outfitters. Lastly, I'd be so grateful if you shared, subscribed, and left a positive review of the show, should your listening platform allow. Subscribing helps us move up the charts and helps more people find the truth.